Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Friday Food Fight. My name is Wes Christian, CEO of Food Handler Solutions, and I'm joined once again by Mr. Bart Christian, nationally recognized speaker and a very special guest for this week. And Bart, why don't you let us hear about our special guest for today?
Well, Wes, is again an honor to be here again and an honor to be able to introduce our guest today. And our guest is Mr. Robert Turcic. You know, Robert is the CEO of Direct Education, where his team has developed a program that we are so excited to be a part of called COVID Smart, which is the world's first workplace compliance training program for COVID-19. Now, Robert, you got quite the past. I'm reading your resume and I'm looking at, reading your bio and looking at it. And, it says in the 90s, you supervised the launch of some of the earliest computer games. So things like Sony and whatnot. Tell us, what kind of games that would we all know that you were a part of?
Oh, I worked on a number of games, Bart. And hi, Wes. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me on the show. In the 90s, one of the things I did was I worked with Sony Pictures. Sony owns the biggest game show library in the world. And so games that everybody in the world is familiar with, things like Wheel of Fortune, The Dating Game, Jeopardy, Pyramid. We also licensed Trivial Pursuit. We put those out on the web, and we didn't really have any market data. This is early. This is in the 90s, like, 1997. We didn't know what the response would be. Well, it was overwhelming. Immediately people came. They found out about it, and we were overwhelmed by interest. And it was a great big success for Sony to do that. Now, here's the interesting thing. Today, I'm going to tell you about an educational program. And you might wonder, why is a game guy doing educational programs? But it turns out on the internet, the two things are quite similar. The way you engage people, the way people respond, and the way you develop that software, very similar. So this is good training for education.
What was packet video, and how did that work? I know you did a lot. I know when we had Scott Jensen, one of your cohorts and co-founders of COVID Smart, on the show about a month ago, and he was very involved in video streaming on mobile phones. And what did you do with that? Because I know that was quite an interesting story he told us. How about you?
Yeah, sure thing. Well, in the late 90s, the number of people using the internet was still in the millions, right? But it wasn't in the billions. And it became pretty evident by 1998, 99, that the next big wave of internet growth was going to be on mobile phones. Now, at the time, you got to remember, a mobile phone those days didn't look like your iPhone today. It was a flip phone. It basically was good for voice and sometimes text. But even that, in the U.S., we barely had text messaging working. So it took a lot of imagination to think about that phone being something you could really use for, say, a game or a video or any kind of other entertainment. But what we knew, because I was at Sony at the time, Sony was making mobile phones. And I was the movie studio's liaison over to the electronics companies in Japan that are part of Sony. And so I saw the roadmap. And at that time, they were selling something on the order of 400 million mobile phones a year. And that's way more than the computers that were being sold. So you could just plot it out on a curve and go, wow, in the future, as the phone gets more and more capable and as the broadband networks get better and better in mobile, you'll be able to do a lot of things on a phone that you today could only do on a computer connected to broadband. And the market will be much bigger because we sell a lot more phones. Now, that was in 1998. And I started the very first mobile games group at Sony with the game shows, of course. But I was so excited about the size and scale of mobile that in 2000, I switched and I worked for a company called Packet Video as the president of applications and services. And we designed the very first video services for mobile phones. And we did that all over the world, in Singapore, all over in Asia, in Japan. We launched it with NTT Docomo, which was the most advanced network in Asia at that time, in Finland and in other parts of Northern Europe where they had the most advanced networks. Remember, this is back in the days when 3G was just rolling out. So it's a long time ago. But we actually managed to make video work on a mobile phone. And the most important thing is we were able to show the skeptics that it was possible to deliver an experience like that. Because a lot of people thought, hey, man, a phone is a phone and a TV is a TV. You can't combine the two. And we were like, absolutely, you can. Fast forward to today, we use mobile video all the time. Everybody's using it to call their families, to stay in touch when you're on the road, when you're taking a trip. You're always using your video phone. But that was not a behavior that we had back in 2000. So it was super fun to launch that.
I bet that was fun. Because, I look at just our training program and the numbers of people that access our program via a mobile device now is skyrocketed in the past, really just the past couple of years. But, we're seeing 50, 60% of people are completing their trainings now on a mobile device.
And remember, the United States is different from most places, right? So in the United States, a lot of people have a room, a den, a place to put a computer. So most people do have a home computer. But in the other parts of the world, people live in an apartment, right? More countries are like Japan than they are like the United States in the sense that people live in apartments in cities. And in a place like that, you don't have room for a computer. You probably have a game console in the living room, and you probably have a mobile phone. And frankly, if you're talking about younger people, they just want to get out of the house. So they're going to principally rely on the mobile phone. So it's the fastest growing and probably the most significant access channel for reaching big audiences is mobile. And you have to optimize for mobile.
Well, gosh, I didn't even think about the fact that you just mentioned, you know, people in other countries, but with virtual learning being a big deal right now, with a lot of kids working from home, maybe they have siblings and they don't have multiple computers to utilize. A lot of those kids might be using cell phones.
That's a really good point, Wes. You know, so here in Los Angeles, where I live, LA County, they were really proud of the fact that they had solved the digital divide and that every family they felt had some kind of computer at home. What they didn't plan on was a pandemic. And so what happened with the pandemic is the family, the whole family was at home. Well, then the parents were probably using that one computer to connect with work, which meant that the kids couldn't get online. And we saw a large number of students, I think on the order of 20% of the students, were not able to complete their courses last spring because they simply didn't have access to a digital device. This is why mobile is really important. An increasing number of people have a smartphone. In the U.S., more than 80% of adults have a smartphone. So you really want to make sure that whatever you deliver is optimized for the smartphone and, of course, tablets and laptops and PCs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, one of the things, well, I did a talking about devices, and you know, I'm an old timer, so I remember the suitcase phones and the, you know, all that kind of stuff. We had to take the antenna and slap it up on top of the car, and you know, I remember all that. But you know, I did a talk not too long, well, a year or so ago, on generational learning, and I talked about just what you're talking about. 80% of the people have smartphones, and I ran across an ad for Radio Shack and found out that if you bought everything that's in this phone independently 15 years ago, it would cost you around $10,000.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And now it's all in this, which I fill it back, and it just amazes me the things that guys like you were able to introduce that was just incredible.
Think about it. Your phone replaces your TV. You can watch a movie on it. It replaces your camera, right? The cameras on the phones are quite good. They were pretty bad 10 years ago, but they're pretty good now, right? So you don't really need to carry a digital camera. You can play games on it. So there goes the Game Boy and all those mobile game devices we used to have. DVD players, that's gone. MP3 players. You just don't need to buy all that junk and carry it around, not to mention the chargers and the battery packs, all that stuff you don't need to haul around with you. So that smartphone in your pocket really comprises a lot of value and access to an awful lot of stuff. So yeah, that's a good thing to carry in mind as you're thinking about planning a new digital service.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well,
another couple of things, you know, I know you're president of digital media for Oprah. The Oprah Winfrey Network. I know we got a lot of people watching the show that know who Oprah is. So tell us a little bit about that experience and answer the big question. Did you ever meet Oprah?
Well, yes, for sure. I worked for her for a number of years, and I ran her digital businesses in Chicago and in Los Angeles. What a lot of folks don't realize is that Oprah Winfrey has the number one women's destination on the web, Oprah.com. It's a trusted brand, too, because she personally supervises it and manages it. And so they understand the content level is very high, very reliable. When I worked with Oprah, we did a number of things together. And of course, there's a lot of entertainment, a lot of interaction with the show and the magazine and so forth. It was like an omni-media service. But one of the most interesting things that we did together was education. And I shared a passion for online education with Oprah. And she was keenly interested in finding out just how much could we achieve with internet and education. And so she gave me the challenge of doing the world's largest online learning programs. We exceeded her expectations. It was really pretty remarkable. At the time, this is 2008 to 2010, you had audiences on, say, YouTube that were watching 2.5 minutes of video on average. Our average viewing time was 89 minutes.
Wow.
The content was pretty intense. You know, it was no commercial break. It would be a solid 90-minute program with an expert on a subject. What Oprah loved is that she could go deep into the topic without commercial interruptions. On TV, you get interrupted every 5 or 10 minutes. So, you know, she'd have a conversation going, and just when it got good, there'd be a commercial break, and she'd have to start the whole thing over after the break. But with the internet, we could go straight through 90 minutes unbroken, and we had enormous completion rates. And our audiences were live. We would reach people in the hundreds of thousands of simultaneous viewers, and then later we'd have it available on demand, and we'd reach tens of millions of people. So what Oprah taught me is that if you start with the right intention and you really want to help people and equip them with good information, you can reach millions and millions of people. And of course, that was 10 years ago. Now you take the mobile phone into account and the fact that people all over the world have broadband access. And now we can actually have a goal of reaching billions of people. And that's what we're trying to do with COVID Smart Training.
Oh. Well, I want to mention one other thing that I noticed about you is that You had a best-selling book, 2016 book of the year, which the title just is more never been more apropos than it is right now. And I'm going to look this book up and actually read it because I just learned about this today. It's called Vaporized: Solid Strategies in a Dematerialized World. And I think that's exactly where we're at now. We're in a world that is actually evolving, dematerializing, and rematerializing all around us.
That's true, Bart. It's a really good point. Thank you for mentioning my book. So I wrote Vaporized after my experiences in mobile, based on all my understanding of what was coming and what had happened at that point. And what I noticed is exactly the point you just made a minute ago, Bart. Your mobile phone has started to absorb the functionality of all these other devices. And while that was happening, we were really turning those physical devices into software. So we were dematerializing things like DVD players and MP3 players and GPS units and so forth. All that stuff was becoming represented by software in a phone. You didn't need to have the physical product. I thought that was a pretty interesting thing. So I wrote the book. What I didn't realize at the time, I thought I was writing a book that was looking backwards. What I didn't realize at the time is that this is actually a trend that has continued. Now, the companies that are at the very forefront of dematerialization, the companies that are building software that replaces physical stuff, those include the internet giants like Apple, Microsoft, Google, Amazon. These companies have gone from strength to strength. And you can say that COVID-19, this global pandemic, has accelerated the trends that started in mobile, that trend towards dematerialization and replacing physical stuff with software. And consider what we're doing right now. In the past, we would have had this conversation together in a studio somewhere, right? A whole TV production studio, or maybe we would have had a meeting in an office. But thanks to technologies like Zoom, we're able to meet virtually and replicate that experience with pure software from the comfort of our own homes.
It's crazy how quickly Zoom has exploded as well. You mentioned Zoom a second ago. I mean, they went from, I think before pre-COVID, 20 million or so users, which is nothing to squint at, to 20 million plus. And I think that it's maybe even climbed above that at this point. But
it's hundreds of millions for Zoom. And bear in mind, you know, Google and Microsoft and everybody else who can get into it, WebEx, they're all trying to carve up a piece of that market as well. So it's safe to say that hundreds of millions of people around the world overnight had to learn how to do video conferencing. Mm. You know, Wes, folks like us, we use this technology all the time because we work in the digital space. So we're quite familiar with it. And the idea of working from home or working remotely, lots of people in the digital technology world were familiar with that. But that wasn't true for every worker in every company. Mm. Now, thanks to the pandemic and the fact that we have to stay at home in a lot of places around the world, suddenly overnight, everybody had to become an expert in connecting over digital devices. And so in a way, Bart, this is like the vaporized idea from my book. Everybody had to become an expert in this vaporized technology, replacing physical offices with software that does the same job. Mm-hmm. So that's the premise of the book. And yeah, in 2016, I was really honored because my book was selected from a field of 10,000 other business books by the editors of Get Abstract. And I won the International Book of the Year Prize at the Frankfurt Book Fair, which is a real big honor. So it was a fun project for me because I got to recap my experiences in mobile and then make some predictions that turned out to be pretty accurate. So yeah, go for it. Take a look at the book.
So you mentioned the training program COVID Smart a second ago, and I've heard you reference, you know, the words go to work smart in the past. And obviously there's a lot of employers, school districts that are wanting to get their customers back. And they're wanting their staff to exactly that, go to work smart. And together, we've actually been able to partner Food Handler Solutions and your company, Direct Education, to start an initiative of go to school smart. But tell everyone a little bit more about that word smart and what that really means.
Sure thing. First of all, I'm really super proud of our partnership. And I'm very excited because you folks at Food Handler Solutions, you're experts in bringing these kinds of programs to the people that work in the school district. So you really understand that customer super well. What my team does is develop software that works at scale, educational software works at scale. And as soon as this pandemic hit, we realized, wow, there's gonna be a big problem here. You know, the government can shut down the economy, but nobody's got the power to switch the economy back on. The only people that can do that are workers and customers who feel confident. And we thought, gosh, how do you bring people back? Well, you've got to teach them. You've got to teach them to understand that the behavior has to change. We've got to adapt ourselves to new set of circumstances. So when I say the word smart, what I really mean is comprehensive training for the entire workforce. Now, you'll hear about some programs that will bring workers back and they'll train, you know, one person in HR on COVID-19. That's great. We think that's a wonderful starting point, but it's not comprehensive. And if you really want to be safe, if you really want to bring your organization back and have it running at full strength, you really need to train everybody in that organization. That's for a couple different reasons. First one is you can't make an assumption that people know what to do. People want to do the right thing. People want to stay safe. They want to keep their families safe. They sure don't want to bring something nasty home to their families. But you can't assume that they know what it is they need to do. And the second thing is you want to have a common baseline expectation among all workers. So you want to train everybody on the same level of material. It doesn't make sense to just train one administrator. You want to train everybody in that organization on the same set of material so that now everybody else in the workforce can be confident that their coworkers understand the rules, they understand the new regulations, and they're all going to abide by them. Now, that sounds a little bit onerous, but remember, what we're talking about is a pandemic that is deadly and it's highly contagious. So we're asking people to devote an hour of their own time to master in a set of skills that'll keep themselves and their families safe. We think that's a pretty reasonable trade-off.
Yeah. Well, with businesses and different operations really wanting to show their customers that it's safe to return back to their establishment, well, would you say that a training like this is really the best way for them to show that they are, they can show their customers and their staff that it's safe to come back to work again?
This is a crucial point. So the first thing is I don't use the word safe because candidly, I'm aware that there's a deadly virus that's being circulated and it's very contagious. And so we steer clear of the word safe. We think smart's better, right? So we can't guarantee that your workplace is going to be free of the virus. It probably isn't. It's probably everywhere. So what you want to do is come back to work and know that your entire workforce has been trained on the basic protocols to prevent the disease, what we call the best practices to prevent infection. And that is super important. So in terms of like a back to work smart plan or back to work safe plan, if you want to use that word, the starting point has to be training. A lot of folks don't know that OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration that sets out the regulations for workplace safety, includes in its guidelines a requirement that employers should train their employees before they return. And that actually makes a great deal of sense. Mm-hmm. We've seen some organizations where they bring everybody back on site and then they try to do the training. But of course, if you think about that, it makes no sense in a pandemic, right? Because if one of those people's sick, well, all you're doing by bringing people back is you're going to create an outbreak. And this is what we want to avoid. You want to avoid that outbreak, right? You want to do whatever you can to keep people operating the business at whatever capacity it can operate, but minimize the risk of infectious outbreak. That's our goal with COVID Smart. Mm.
Obviously that's the goal at COVID Smart. But what do you think the risk of returning without something like this in place is? Is it that outbreak or could it potentially be worse?
Yeah, it's really bad. So some folks haven't taken this seriously. I'm sorry to say, and we've seen this happen again and again in the United States, where we're really split, right, on this whole matter of COVID-19. Some folks still don't take it seriously. And it's a real shame because there are real human consequences. So the risks include, the first biggest risk is that some of your workers might get sick. If you open up with no training, no preparation, and you make no precautions whatsoever, if you bring back a dozen or more people, almost certainly you're going to see some folks get sick. Now, let's think that one through. If people get sick from this particular disease, what you've got to do is you've got to shut the place down and decontaminate the entire facility. Plus, you got to put all those workers in quarantine for 14 days. And that's a tremendous personal burden for them. But also, it's a huge disruption to the organization. That's not all. There's also the negative impact on your reputation and your brand. Most people trust the providers of whatever service, whether it's a school that they trust to send their kids to, or they believe their children are going to be taken care of and treated safely, or whether it's a business that you do business with every day where you buy things from them. You have an implicit level of trust that that provider is doing what they can to make it safe and clean and sanitary. Now, if you find out that there's an outbreak in a local place, you'll never set foot in that shop again. That happened to me here in Los Angeles because there's a grocery store in my neighborhood and one of my neighbors mentioned to me early on, she said, they're not doing any social distancing. They're not managing the crowds. And I see people crowding into that place. Well, 2 weeks later, they had an outbreak and they had 7 employees get sick. They had to shut the facility for 2 weeks, but that's not all. I'll never set foot in that shop again in my life.
Wow.
So there's another set of consequences that we should mention as well, which are these. If you do have an outbreak, people get sick, it could very well be that those people are going to have an impairment, some sort of malady for the rest of their lives. We still don't know the full medical consequences of getting that COVID-19, but we're starting to hear about what they call long haulers, people who've got some physical disability, whether it's breathing or some sort of vascular disability that they carry with them the rest of their lives. Other people die. Now, the actual number of people who die from this disease relative to the number who get it is not that great, but it's still a large number because the capacity of the disease to affect everybody. So it could be a very large number in aggregate. Let me assure you, if you're an employer and you're watching this, you must take into account class action lawsuits and lawsuits for workplace liability from negligence. Employers must take precautions to ensure that their employees have been trained. They've got to be able to demonstrate that. And with COVID Smart Training, you get a timestamp certificate for every employee who completes the program. That's great for the employees. It shows them that they've completed the training, and that's a certification they can carry with them. But it's also great for the employer because it's proof that the employer made best efforts and took reasonable precautions to train people on how to return to work and operate as safely as possible under the circumstances.
Well, you mentioned earlier the baseline of education. Now, make sure that there was that people had all the information they needed. And why would you do? Now, my natural question that I would ask at the beginning, you've done a great job of answering, is why would I need to do this if it's not required? Why can't I just take my staff and do hand washing training and face mask training and things like that? But I naturally kind of step back to our food handler program, our food handler card program, our manager certification program, which is not required across the country, but yet we have customers nationwide in areas that don't require it. And why? Because they want to make sure that their staff is trained the right way, the same way, in a manner that they can have something that should there be an incident, they've got some recourse to say, look, we did our best. We trained them. We gave them comprehensive certified food handler training. And I think you could say the same thing with COVID Smart, that, you know, control's an illusion, but you can influence the outcome. And I think that's what we're looking at with COVID Smart, is a comprehensive, cohesive training program that can be posted to let your customers know that things are being done safe, to let your staff know that everybody in the building knows what to do, and that we've all been educated. And the beauty of it is they don't have to all come together. They can do it remotely, and then they come to work just like we do on our program.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, Bart, I love hearing you say that, and I agree. From the very first conversation that we had, we saw eye to eye because you and I share an understanding of our customers. You know, there's a lot of folks out there that have an idea that somehow there's evil employers that don't care about their employees, and I just don't think that's true. I think most employers care deeply about the health of their employees. They worry about it all the time. I'm a small businessman. You're a small businessman. We worry about our employees. We want to make sure that they're healthy. And of course, we also have those business reasons to care about that too. We don't want to shut down. We don't want brand damage. We sure don't want a lawsuit or any kind of hassle like that. So why would you bother to do it? It's a little bit above and beyond, right? So the bare minimum, you could do the bare minimum. You could just bring people back and hand them all a face mask and take your risks that way. My sense is that most companies understand that that's not really very smart. That's not very safe. That's not going to lead you to the right outcome. Once again, I'm going to refer to my own experience here in LA. So back in March, they weren't giving out face masks to workers because the grocery stores didn't want to scare the customers, even though the customers were all wearing masks. Then in April, it became mandatory. So suddenly you saw everybody wearing a mask, but nobody did any training. And so even today, when you go to a grocery store, you're going to notice workers have the mask here or here or here or even here, which is like, what's the point of wearing a mask around your neck? You're not doing anything at that point. This is security theater. It's not real security. It's false security. Because what's happening when that happens, when you hand out equipment and you don't train people, well, that manager thinks they've done the job, right? Well, we gave everybody a mask, everybody's fine. You haven't done the job. If people aren't using the equipment properly, you're still at risk, and they're still at risk. If you wear a mask down here or even down here, you're not solving the problem. People can still get this disease, and it's a deadly disease. And that responsibility rests with the manager and the owner of the business. And you got to take this seriously. It's time for American businesses to understand that nobody else is going to come rescue you. You're not going to get bailout from the government. You're not going to get support from some government authority. You got to make independent business decisions that determine what's the right thing to do. And the right thing to do, we believe, is to train the employees so that they all have a common understanding and you can hold them all accountable to conform. That's exactly what compliance training is about. So this is an important management tool to enable the workplace, the workers in the workplace, and the employer to have total confidence about coming back to that workplace, even under these circumstances.
And you know, Robert, that kind of got me thinking. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Bart, go ahead. I apologize.
I was going to say, it goes beyond the mask. You know, I think that's a lot of, I'm seeing a lot of things. That the thing that I love about your program was, obviously, there's mask training,
Yeah.
And there's personal hygiene, washing. Yeah. But there's more to it than that. And I think that that's the component that I think is what I found in the customers that we've worked with is the way the information was presented. Number one, it actually made them feel better. Yeah. Because they realized that there were things that they could do individually, personally, and corporately that made everybody safe. That didn't just, obviously masks are important. Obviously hand washing is important, but there are other components that went into it to make an even a more comprehensive safety program.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Barton. And I'm glad you pointed that out because, most people first were at home, right? When they first had to deal with this, they were sitting at home. And at home, if you just make sure you keep your things clean and take your shoes off outside, you're going to be okay, right? Chances are pretty good you're going to be okay. Now the question comes, how do I get back to work? Suddenly I'm going to be intersected with a whole bunch of other people, and I don't know how they live or where they live or what they're doing at home. Now I got to take some precautions. What are the precautions? Oh, we hear about things like social distancing. Okay, I can do that with my family because I can set the rules in my house. What do you do at work? How do you do social distancing and have a meeting? How do you do social distancing and have lunch with your coworkers? These are the specific kinds of things we answer. The same thing is true with disinfecting or cleaning a surface, right? We hear about that. Oh, yeah, you should disinfect a surface. How do you do that? How often do you do that? What things should you clean? Oh, and our program is full of stuff where you'll be like, oh, I didn't know that, right? Much of what's in the program, you'll be like, yep, I'm familiar with that. Yep, I've heard that. And then every once in a while, there'll be a thing where you go, oh, I never really thought about that. That's the whole point of training people before they come back to the workplace, right? Exactly. You want to get this information out to them as soon as you can. And of course, if you already have workers that are in the workforce and they're already back, that's great. This program's useful for them as well. I guarantee you're going to find things, maybe 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 4, you're going to find things where you say, okay, I'm familiar with that, but that other piece I did not know, and that's a crucial piece. Now, for each individual person who takes a course, those pieces they didn't know, they'll be different. That's why you want to train everybody on the same standard, so you fill in all those blanks. And everybody comes back and they can look each other in the eye and say, all right, we understand how this works. We understand what we need to do. And the workers can hold each other accountable to that standard. That's another empowering thing. Because look, we live in the United States and people are into freedom and liberty and independence here. That's just the nature of Americans. And so people are going to want to do their own thing. And you see that happening all the time. If you have 10 employees, I guarantee 2 of them don't want to wear a mask or 2 of them don't want to social distance. Now, as a manager, you got a problem on your hands because those other 8 employees are going to look at you and they're going to say, what are you doing about these 2 guys? Mm-hmm. What are you going to do to keep the rest of us safe? Mm-hmm. Well, if you don't have a workplace compliance training program, you don't have a tool for managing that behavior. But if you've taken the workplace compliance training program, if everybody's taken it, now you can put forth a policy. You can say our policy in this company is the following, and you set it out, and it's part of what's included in the training. Mm-hmm. That is a really sensible business approach. That's how you deal with this pandemic, we think, in a smart way.
Right. Now, you mentioned at the very beginning, or a couple of minutes in, about other trainings and other information pieces and sources that are on the internet. And I'm reminded that actually the beginning of our conversation when we were talking about how mobile has exploded and really the internet age that we're living in. And with that internet age, we are also living in an age of misinformation. So I think it's important for us to talk about credibility, really, and ultimately who we can trust for reliable, credible information when it comes to COVID safety.
It's true. It's a really good point, Wes. You know, isn't it funny? Like we all thought, oh, the information's coming. You know, the internet's coming. The information superhighway. It's going to be free information for everybody. And this will make everybody smarter. And it'll be better for democracy. That was the idea back in the 90s. And now you look back and you say, what a rosy utopian view. In fact, social media is a cesspool. There's just so much garbage information. And frankly, it's a lot easier to spread garbage information. It's a lot more interesting, frankly. It's a lot more sensational. Even if it's not true, it's sort of sport for some people to spread this information around. And you see that. You know, it's that old Mark Twain saying that a lie can travel all the way around the world before the truth has even gotten out of bed and put on its shoes. So if you're going to be in the truth business, you got to work a lot harder. For our program, this is the specific problem we sought to solve. We notice that there's a lot of information out there, a lot of free information, but it's of various qualities. Some of it's good, some of it's not. Some of it's accurate, some of it's out of date. Some of it is reliable and trustworthy. Some of it is coming from sources you don't know who wrote this stuff or where it's coming from. We want to solve that problem. And again, what we're trying to do is give reassurance to the workers, to the employers, and to the customers, and in your case, the families that are sending their children off to school, right? There's a lot of people who want to be satisfied that the information they're getting is something that they can trust. So when we started this program, my team knows a lot about launching digital services, but candidly, we're not experts in epidemiology or infectious disease. So what we did was we reached out to the number one group in the world, the experts on infectious disease. It's a group called APIC, A-P-I-C, and that stands for the Association of Professionals in Infection Control and Epidemiology. Now, epidemiology is the study of epidemic diseases, of diseases that spread like wildfire. These are the folks that know how to stop them. And they've got protocols that they've been using since the beginning of Ebola and also SARS. These folks understand very well how to stop a disease. That's when they get called in, right? So there's an outbreak someplace in the world, and they call an epidemiologist from APIC, and they say, help us stop this thing in the field before it grows like wildfire. We sat down with them and said, we want to bring those same protocols to the modern workplace. So we're not talking about a field hospital somewhere where there's an outbreak of a disease. We're talking about the U.S. business place, because that's where the locus of the disease is today. And business owners need this information. So do the workers. So together with APIC, we took the goal of creating a version of those protocols that can be learned, but in less than an hour. Usually it takes days or weeks to be trained and certified in these kinds of procedures. We tried to shrink that down to an hour because we feel like that's the maximum we can ask workers to do, like an hour of time. How much can we get across? Well, we're very satisfied. We got a comprehensive program, but it's at that same standard, that high standard. And the folks at APIC hold us accountable to a very high standard. They make sure our information is current and accurate. And the good news is if you sign up for the COVID Smart Training Program, we can also provide updates and information. We're in the process of developing that right now, because this information changes. You know, it does grow and evolve as the medical understanding of COVID-19 evolves. So you're in for a full year of training if you do it this way.
Now, we've talked a good amount about the different elements that are needed to really build an effective, reliable training and ultimately, I guess, staff returning process. Tell us how COVID Smart really checks all the boxes of those different elements that we've already talked about and should make people, especially employers, feel comfortable in this plan that you've put together for them for returning customers and employees back to their environment.
That's a good question. So let me respond like this. It's very important for every company, every business manager, to have a plan for how to restart their business. And if you're already operating your business and you haven't had that plan done, it's time to do it. You really got to sit down and say, okay, what are all the things we need to do to make sure that the workforce stays safe? Because I can guarantee if you bring back 10 or 20 people and put them in a closed area, especially with the winter months coming up, you're going to have an outbreak sooner or later. You're just running the worst set of odds. So you really want to have a plan before you bring people back. And if you've already brought people back, now's the time to have that plan in place. And that plan has to include several different things. Some way to detect the disease, what they call identification. So that would involve testing or temperature checks, contact tracing, a way to determine whether or not somebody on the staff actually has this disease. And then you can take immediate intervention to isolate those people, take them out of the workforce, and limit the chances of an outbreak. But detection or identification, that's just one half of the equation. The other half is prevention. Right? Because detection and testing and all that stuff just shows, it's a rearview mirror. It just shows you what happened 2 weeks ago, really, because those people could be asymptomatic before they start to show they've got the disease. So you also need some plan, some roadmap for how we're going to proceed into the future. That's where prevention fits in. And our program is baseline for prevention. That is exactly what our COVID Smart Training Program is. It teaches you all the skills for prevention. Now add to that masks, gloves, face shields, plexiglass screens, all the other physical things that we offer, that people offer to keep a workplace safe. Those are going to vary by business. Each business is going to have a different solution for that. It should be part of your plan. What we're saying is that the training for all the employees, that's a baseline. And then on top of that, you might add masks, gloves, face shields, and so forth. We think everybody needs to have a plan like that. Now, the COVID Smart Training Program covers all these things. And so it gives you a great understanding of it. We start with the basics. What is a virus? And how is a virus transmitted? Now, you might wonder, why do we need such basic information in a program like this? Well, that's because there's so much disinformation out there on the internet. And my example of that is very simple. Often, even today, I'll hear from people who say, what kind of antibiotic can I use? I'm like, no, this is not a bacteriological infection. Antibiotic has no effect on a virus. You could be using all the antibacterial soap you want. It's not going to stop this thing. So you really need to have a plan for how do you deal with a virus and understand how a virus is transmitted, and then the rest of our program talks about how to stop the transmission, specific skills that you can learn, and you can learn them quickly. So we think that that's the right way to go back to work, is to have a plan. And inside of that plan, there has to be a provision for training all the workers, not just one or two people on the staff, but all the workers. The last thing you should have in your plan is a scenario. You know, the scenario we're all aiming for is that people can go back to work as safely as possible under the circumstances, and that everybody conforms to this plan, and thereby we reduce the risk of disease and you can operate your business to the best of your ability throughout this pandemic. That's the optimal case. But you also need to plan for the worst case. And this is the part nobody wants to talk about, and I don't even like bringing it up, but you have to think through carefully, what do I do if there's an outbreak? Because if you don't have a plan for that, you're going to have a problem. It's that old saying, if you fail to plan, well, then you better plan at failure. So if you don't have a great understanding of immediately what actions you will take if you detect an outbreak on your premises, you're for sure going to have a big problem on your hands. And so we recommend that also as part of the planning. So it's a little bit of pre-planning, you know, before you come back, a little bit of a sense of how are we going to operate this thing, and then also what if scenarios, and you really need to think through all three things.
Well, how does this impact? I know that you rolled this out in your first community was mm-hmm. Malibu, California.
Yeah.
And you rolled it out, and that community became the first in the nation COVID smart community. How did this impact the businesses, and what differences did you see as how people, first off, absorbed the information, and then how did they use it? And what differences did you see amongst the community between those businesses that had the COVID smart placard and those businesses that did not?
So let me tell you, the Malibu rollout is still in the process of happening right now. We're getting very positive feedback from folks there who've done it. So those who completed the training love it. The number one issue that we encountered with folks in the city of Malibu is that people working in shops were afraid of their customers. This is quite interesting. You know, a town like Malibu is a beach community. So in the wintertime, they have a relatively small population. But in the summer, millions and millions of people come in to use the beaches. And some of those people are coming from who knows where. Well, they'll walk into a shop after a day of frolicking on the beach, and they're not wearing a mask, and they're pretty casual, you know. And so they walk in, and now the workers inside that shop, they're scared because they don't know where these people are coming from. They don't know what they're bringing in with them. And those workers are stuck in that box all day long, and they sure don't want to take that stuff home with them. So we were trying to address that specific issue when we launched the program. What I can tell you now that we've rolled it out, not just in Malibu, all over the country now, we have people in Maryland and Virginia and Pennsylvania and other states that are doing it. The people feel much safer. They feel much more confident. They feel more relaxed because they know that they can rely on their coworkers to maintain the same standard. They don't have to be hyper-vigilant about this stuff. They know that if they mind their side of the street, do the right precautions, and if they slip, they know their colleagues will remind them, keep the standards as high as possible. It lets everybody breathe a little bit, relax, and understand that they can continue to operate their business. And if you follow these simple precautions, you're going to greatly reduce the risk of getting this disease or spreading it to someone else, or God forbid, taking it home with you. And so this has been a great relief, and people welcome it. You know, sometimes you hear from people who say, oh, I don't want to do workplace training. I don't want to do compliance training. It's a pain in the neck. I get that. I totally understand that. Nobody wants to take a training program. But in this case, the consequences of not taking it are so great, not just to the business owners, but to the workers themselves. Nobody wants to get this disease. And if you know anyone who's gotten it, you know that it can be quite severe. It's true. A lot of people who get it, they have very mild symptoms. But even those so-called mild cases, some of those people have lingering symptoms that last more than 70 days. Several of my friends and some of my coworkers have had COVID-19. In some cases, it took them more than 2 months to recover from that disease. Some people haven't fully recovered. So bear in mind, this can be a very, very negative outcome for you personally. You really don't want to do this, and you really should be motivated to do everything you can to avoid it. The best way to deal with COVID-19 is not to get it in the first place.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I saw in schools was that, you know, we just rolled out the program in Creighton School District in Phoenix, Arizona, and now we're seeing districts as far as New Jersey and California, coming on board with the program. And, you know, the thing that I find the most interesting about the contrast between, say, a school environment and a business environment is the school environment, training and education is the norm.
That's true. They do
it all the time. They go through constantly. It's not something that's unusual. Now, that's what we, with our school food handler program, we've helped schools to develop that culture of training in the school district, particularly in the food service department. And so that's been a little bit, I believe, going to be a little bit easier process to get them to understand the need for the training. I admire what you're doing in the business community, because I can see the business, particularly a clothing shop, you know, or something that food related would be different. but somebody that's in a flower shop, a clothing shop, you know, or a jewelry store, you know, I could see them being, you know, two things: apprehensive about the need for training, and the second thing is maybe a little sometimes slow to embrace it. So yeah. I just really appreciate it. I mean, I think y'all done a great job what you've done in Malibu.
It's a really good point you're making. You know, the schools, that's a learning environment, and it's managed by people who are experts in learning. So they're more naturally inclined towards that. That's a really super solid point. And it's also true that some other kinds of businesses, they're less focused on training. In some cases, they don't even know why they need to do the training, right? So we have a little bit of a learning curve there.
Right.
My only message to those folks is simple. Just think about the negative consequences of not doing the training. You know, what we're trying to mitigate here is the risk of an outbreak. And the consequences of an outbreak can be life-altering, both for the workers and for the employers. So it's super important for the employers to take this matter seriously. Our biggest enemy here is not just bad information, it's complacency, where people feel like, oh, somebody else will deal with that problem. It's not my problem to solve. Well, if you own a business, it is your problem. You own the problem. Like it or not, you know, and I get it. People dislike this. They're angry. They have all kinds of emotional responses to it. It's just the way it is. In a way, Bart, it's like the fires we're having in California right now. Nobody likes this. Nobody wants this. Who owns the problem are the people in the real estate where the fires are happening. They sure wish the government would do something different. They sure wish somebody else would come and save them. But that's not common. There's no cavalry coming. You're on your own. You got to deal with this on your own. And with respect to a pandemic, we're all in it together. So the precautions that you take are going to keep me safe. The precautions I take are going to keep you safe. Mm-hmm. Now, in the United States, we're polarized right now. And it's unfortunate. That's just the nature of the place right now. Our political scene is highly polarized. But there was a time when I was a younger person, when you were a younger person, there was a time when we had a communal feeling about the United States. We were all in the community together. Hey, we might have political differences. Hey, we might have some social differences, but we're all together in this. We got to rediscover that feeling, that communal feeling, where we're all together in a community and we're all looking out for each other. It's time for us to dig a little deeper in our souls and find out that part that connects us each together. Because this disease absolutely will go after anybody. It doesn't care if you vote Republican, Democrat, or something else. The disease does not care about the politics. It's equal opportunity in that way. And we all have to find a way to bind together. We have to surmount our differences and find what links us all together. And in this respect, the school program that you folks are doing, Back to School Smart, is so vitally important because the schools represent one of the fundamental parts of our society. That's what links the community together. All these families, they all live different. Some of them are rich. Some of them are poor. Some of them come from different backgrounds and experiences. Some of them have different faiths, but they all come together to school. All of us are, in a way, risking because we're pooling our kids together into a common community. And so the school is a really important place for the community to come together. Maybe this is a place where we can rekindle that spirit of community. Maybe from the schools themselves, it'll start to filter through the rest of society. So families will start to become aware of what it means to be COVID smart, what it means to be trained in the best practices for the prevention of the disease. Maybe they'll see the school administrators take this so seriously to protect their own children that they'll start to take it seriously in their own lives, in their own homes, and in their own businesses. And Bart, Wes, I can't think of a bigger mission. I can't think of a more important thing to do. We're really trying to save lives here. That is our primary goal. And we will do this for any organization in any way we can, because we just want to get this information out there. And I have such deep respect and profound gratitude for the folks at Food Handle Solutions for bringing the COVID Smart program to the school districts and making it available to schools all over the United States. Because what you guys are doing is good work. It's good for communities. It's good for families. It's good for children. It's good for the teachers. It's good for the administrators. It's good for the janitorial staff. It's good for everybody in the community that's connected to that school. That's such an important mission. I really salute you, and I'm really grateful to you for your help. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
We're honored to do it. And we share the passion. You know, I was looking at your, you know, I was going to talk about something in your bio, and I really didn't. But, you know, you've got something on your website that says who we are.
Yeah.
You know, and the words that stick out with me are words that I share about who I am and what I try to do. It's passionate, hopeful, realistic, optimistic, fact-based, logical, and concerned, you know, caring and sharing and kind. I mean, those are things that are, those are who we are too. And I really think that you're right. I mean, the spider web out of a school district is huge in the community. It hits every socioeconomic spot, and it's really good. It'd be wonderful to see a program that maybe was geared towards students. Hmm. You know, So something to think about. So because that would be, you know, that's just another way to to get the word out to, so it gets home with people.
That's right. That's true. And in many cases, it's true. Sometimes kids come home from school and they teach their parents the right way to do things. So that wouldn't be the first time that's happened.
Well, I can tell you this. They changed the menu program about 5 years ago with schools and added a lot more fruits and vegetables that they didn't have before. And you hear stories from kids who I would hear stories of kids who had been out of school 2, 3, 4 years talking to their somebody in the lunchroom saying, you know, my whole family eats kiwi now, and we didn't even know what a kiwi was. You know, we're now eating mango, and we didn't even know what a mango was because the USDA implemented more fresh fruits into the program. And so I can tell you for an absolute fact, the kids take stuff home, and it sticks with the families for a long time.
Well, we saw that happen with seatbelts. You know, they started the seatbelt initiative several years back and taught students that wearing seatbelts was important. Because trying to convince parents to do it was, in some cases, a futile task.
That's true. Now you have that little cop in the back seat who's like, "Mom, you got to put your seatbelt on."
That's right. You're right.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. And we've run a little bit long here, but just in kind of closing, is there any last final thoughts, final words of advice, any statements that you'd like to make to our viewers before we sign off?
My main message is, go to work smart, go to school smart. Don't pretend this thing's going to go away magically. It won't. It's only going to go away if we all make an effort. If we all come together and make an effort to do the right behaviors. That's how you stop the transmission. You literally can stop the transmission of this disease if we all do the right behaviors, if we all change our behavior. Until there's a vaccine, which might be a year or more in the future, and until there's a medical cure for this disease, the only way to stop it is by changing our behavior. We've all got to come together to do that. And you've heard me say it again and again and again. Right now, I'd recommend you just check out Go to School Smart, Go to Work Smart. Find out how your organization can get smart about COVID-19. Thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, you said something to me, Robert, a while back, and it was that, you know, that there's no vaccine. There's no real solutions being offered there. And that people are going to remain apprehensive. And in this war that we're in against this virus, and that the only weapon we really have is information. And I think that you guys have provided such a great tool, and it's an honor for us to work with you guys. And, you know, Wes, I know that he mentioned a couple of websites. Those are going to be in the show notes. So that if anybody wants to see that, go to Work Smart, Go to School Smart. Those are all. And, Robert, it's just been an honor talking to you. I really appreciate your time, and thank you so much.
Thank you. I really value your contribution, both of you, Bart and Wes. It's a pleasure to be in business with you. Let's go save some lives together.
Absolutely. Well, Robert, thank you again, and we look forward to chatting with you again very soon. And Bart, as always, pleasure to see you. And to everyone out there watching, we will see you again next Friday at 12 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. Take care and have a great weekend.